Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service, with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
Want more from your podcast app? Graduate to Pocket Casts, your free one-stop shop for podcast listening, search and discovery. The beautifully designed app gives you more control and makes it easier to discover and organize podcasts with powerful tools to customize listening. Hear all your favorite shows at pocketcast.com or find us in the Apple app or Google Play stores.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. Hello, I'm Oliver Conway, and this edition is published in the early hours of Monday, the 30th of March. Our main stories: President Trump pledges to vanquish the coronavirus as his medical adviser warns that up to 200,000 Americans could die. Italy sees its first drop in the number of deaths and new infections. And Britain is told to brace itself for a possible 6 months of isolation. Also in the podcast.
So the bass line's got a bit of a sort of reggaeton feel to it. That dum da da da
da dum da da. The composer of the BBC News theme tune meets his biggest fan, a girl who turned it into a hit video. The peak death rate from the coronavirus outbreak in the US is likely to hit in 2 weeks' time, around Easter, according to President Trump. Speaking at a news conference in the White House, he said he was extending social distancing guidelines until the end of April, and he pledged to do everything necessary to combat the outbreak.
This is a tough one because it spreads so quickly, like nothing we've seen. It spreads so easily, so quickly. We're unleashing every tool in our nation's vast arsenal, economic, medical, and scientific, military, homeland security is working very, very hard with all of them in order to vanquish the virus.
Mr. Trump also said that if the U.S. could hold down COVID-19 deaths to 100 to 200,000, it would have done a good job. His top infectious disease expert, Dr. Anthony Fauci, had earlier suggested that that number of fatalities was possible. The U.S. has the most confirmed cases in the world, but a lower death rate than some other nations, around 2,300 people so far. Earlier, I asked our correspondent in the U.S., Peter Bowes, about that prediction of 200,000 possible deaths from Dr. Fauci.
It is ominous in terms of a prediction, but he was also very cautious about those numbers as well. And he says it's based on data models. Clearly, American experts have been looking at what's been happening around the rest of the world in terms of the speed of the spread of the virus. And America was actually quite slow initially to respond to it, especially as it applied to getting out testing kits around the country, where to this day still relatively few, if you compare American cities with other places again around the world, relatively few tests have been done. So it's actually very difficult to get accurate figures projecting forward. But that's the number that he came up with, potentially a million people infected. But again, he was cautious and said that that was actually very unlikely, although possible.
We've also heard in the past couple of hours from the New York State Governor Andrew Cuomo, his state obviously the worst affected in the US. How is New York coping?
New York is having a really tough time. It is the epicenter still of the outbreak in the United States. Hospitals are stretched to the limit. We've been hearing from the mayor of New York City, Bill de Blasio, saying that New York City has 1 week of supplies, medical supplies, to care for any New Yorker that becomes sick. So there's still a desperate need for those essentials like face masks and ventilators, many of which are on the way to the city, but they need to be in the hospitals, they need to be in the hands of nurses, and that's still not happening to the extent that health workers in New York would like. Of course, there's a ship heading to New York, which will bring with it 1,000 extra beds later on Monday. They'll be used just to take the pressure off the existing hospital system.
And what is the picture elsewhere in the US?
More and more cities are reporting similar problems to New York City. So we've got New Orleans in Louisiana. We've got Chicago that's experiencing similar problems as the wave of cases just continues to go across the country and continues to rise.
Peter Bowes in the US. Well, next to the latest from Europe, where two countries, Spain and Italy, now account for more than half of the global deaths from COVID-19. On Sunday, Spain recorded its highest daily total yet, but Italy reported 130 fewer fatalities than the day before. The authorities in both Spain and Italy are hopeful that the worst could soon be behind them. They say they may be experiencing or nearing the peak of the outbreak. Italy's Deputy Health Minister, Pierpaolo Sileri, said the lockdown was starting to work.
Obviously, when you test more, you may find more positive people. And this will explain the increased number of positive that we found over the last 2 days. But I believe that we are living in the peak of this epidemia. I believe in 1 week time, 10 days maximum, we will see a drop, a significant drop of positive cases.
I asked our correspondent Damien McGuinness in Berlin what the Italian authorities were basing their optimism on.
The evidence so far, they say, is because in some regions there's a slowing down of infection rate, but I think a lot of it is mostly hope. Obviously, also, the restrictions have been pretty severe, so there is very little social contact from what you can tell by most people abiding by regulations, and very few people are hitting the streets in Italy and Spain as well, where they're just tightening restrictions again for tomorrow and telling people not to go to work unless they are key workers. So the fact that the restrictions are so severe would indicate that ordinarily infections would now start to go down. We have had periods over the last few weeks where that hope has been also there, and that hasn't happened. So, you know, we can only really pray that that will be the case. But so far, what we can say is the restrictions are really being ramped up in many countries. What we're seeing here in Germany is that, interestingly, though, although the infection rate is one of the highest in the world at almost 60,000 now, the death toll is actually very low, under 500 still. Now, that tells us a few things. And that really shows, as we heard from that Italian minister just now, that the rate of testing is crucial, because the more you test, as the WHO experts have said, the more we can see who has this virus. What Germany has done is they have tested people with few symptoms or hardly any symptoms. And what that means is that they could nip it in the bud more successfully. And it shows that elsewhere in other countries, the actual real infection rate is much higher than we really know. So the other question is really the debate about how long this lockdown would last. And that's the real debate here in Germany, because there are voices now calling for the restrictions to be eased slightly to at least help the economy. Angela Merkel has said no to that. And so what we're going to see in Germany and most of Europe, at least until the middle of April, and probably longer, we're going to see these restrictions carry on for quite a while.
Damien McGuinness in Berlin. Well, on the subject of restrictions, when will life be back to normal? That's the question on everyone's minds. Here in Britain, the second most senior medic has suggested British people will need to adjust to the new way of living for 6 months or possibly longer. Our science editor David Shookman reports.
Any action to try to stamp out the virus was never likely to be over quickly. We're in the phase of the outbreak where deaths from COVID-19 are likely to double every 3 days or so, and we haven't yet reached the peak. The scientists who've simulated how the disease might spread have always assumed that social distancing and other measures would need to be in place for at least 13 weeks. And at the daily briefing, the Deputy Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Jenny Harris, warned that the fight against the virus and the need for the public to help might easily go on much longer.
I think 3 weeks for review, 2 or 3 months to see whether we've really squashed it, but about 3 to 6 months, ideally, and lots of uncertainty in that, but then to see at which point we can actually get back to normal. And it is plausible that it could go further than that.
As the Prime Minister has said in his letter to every household, things will get worse before they get better.
Our science editor, David Shookman. In normal circumstances, the Belarusian Premier League would attract little attention. But with football suspended in many countries in Europe and further afield, Belarus is now one of the few places that fans can still watch the beautiful game, as Will Leonardo reports.
Relief has come from a surprising corner of the continent. Fans starved of the game are turning to Belarus for their fix. There, the Premier League is ploughing on regardless and stadiums remain open to supporters. New followers are getting used to names like Smolievici, who were beaten 1-0 by Islish in the capital Minsk today. With the newfound attention comes money. Sports networks from 10 different countries, including Russia and India, have now signed broadcast rights with the Belarusian FA. A federation spokesman has called it an unprecedented situation. Belarus still has fewer than 100 confirmed coronavirus cases, but there's been criticism of the decision to keep going as normal. That's the president, Alexander Lukashenko, saying it was better to die standing than to live on your knees while taking part in an ice hockey game yesterday. He added that he hadn't seen any viruses flying around the chilled stadium. The authoritarian leader has previously suggested vodka and farm work as a way to prevent COVID-19.
Will Leonardo reporting. The theme tune played on BBC TV News has taken on a life of its own on social media, with hundreds of videos showing people dancing, rapping and raving along. One by Rachel Leary clocked up tens of thousands of hits after she pretended she was DJing using hand sanitizers as dials and spraying fabric freshener like a smoke machine. We spoke to David Lowe, who composed the BBC News tune, about how to write music that captures the imagination. Rachel was on the line as he revealed his trade secrets.
The idea was the pips on the radio, when you hear the beats, you instantly know you're listening to the radio, you know, and it's time for the news. And I thought, oh, well, maybe. How about doing it? I was thinking to myself, we could do the pips with a dance beat, you know, because it's all about time and accuracy and stuff.
Gets you hyped up for the news.
Yeah, you could use the pip and like this, and then which is a sound in itself, you know, that works, and then start adding drums to it, like a bit more drums like that, and just building up the idea. So pips with a dance beat, and then adding the bass line.
I can hear this in Ibiza now.
So the bass line's got a bit of a sort of reggaeton feel to it, you know, that dum cha da dum da da dum da da, that sort of feel, and then building up with big drums to add a bit of drama and tension. The ambition was to come up with a theme tune that everybody would like or love, because in the end, everybody, when you write music, you want everybody to love it. It just sort of goes to prove that if you've got a dream and you follow it, then it will actually happen. So it's been great.
David Lowe on becoming a TikTok sensation. Still to come in the podcast.
My avant-garde was really very avant-garde, maybe much more than other countries.
From experimental music to the soundtrack for The Shining, we look at the life of composer Krzysztof Penderecki, who's died at the age of 86. Among the world leaders dealing with the coronavirus, one in particular stands out, Jair Bolsonaro of Brazil. He has ignored health advice, left isolation while waiting for a coronavirus test result, and accused the media of exaggerating the threat of the outbreak. Katie Watson reports from Sao Paulo.
90% de nós não teremos qualquer manifestação.
As the world tries desperately to tackle this pandemic, Brazil's president is doing his best to downplay it.
Seria quando muito acometido de uma gripezinha ou resfriadinho.
In a television address last week, Jair Bolsonaro repeated his now well-worn phrase. It's just the sniffles, he says, hysteria and panic whipped up by the media. Going against his own health ministry's advice, Bolsonaro's been shaking hands with supporters and posing for selfies. He's angry because he came to power promising a better economy, and coronavirus has put a stop to that. So he's determined to make this pandemic political, blaming his adversaries for trying to destroy the country. In Sao Paulo's poorer suburbs, where many are already bearing the brunt of the economic crisis, there's not much love for Bolsonaro. I met Serle hanging around her neighbourhood with nothing to do. She worked in a restaurant until last week. Now she's jobless. I've never liked him, she said. I'd like to tell him to his face that he's the worst president we've ever had. He just looks after the rich. This has been the soundtrack to many an evening recently. People banging pots on the balconies in protest, angry with a president they see as irresponsible and out of touch, a man known for denying science, and a man who looks to Donald Trump as his inspiration. Oliver Stenkel is Associate Professor of International Relations at the Getulio Vargas Foundation in Sao Paulo.
Clearly, Bolsonaro is not well equipped to deal with this crisis, and as a consequence, there's near certainty and there's consensus among health specialists that more people will die, and that the suffering and the suffering in terms of the number of victims, but also the economic impact, will be more severe in Brazil because of the lack of leadership.
Sem pânico ou histeria, como venho falando desde o princípio.
Jair Bolsonaro has always railed against the establishment. It's part of his DNA. But in these times of crisis, people don't need a blame game. They need a problem to be solved, and fast.
Cada vez mais unidos. Deus abençoe nossa pátria querida.
A report from Brazil by Katie Watson. Different countries have seen different rates of compliance for their various coronavirus restrictions. But police in Israel have been criticised after allowing an estimated 300 people to attend the funeral of a well-known ultra-Orthodox Jewish rabbi. I heard more from our Middle East analyst, Sebastian Usher.
There was a large number of people who came out, men, ultra-Orthodox. This was a prominent rabbi. It wasn't as many, this is what the police say, as there might have been. It could have been numbered in the thousands, but at least 400 or so people were there. And obviously this is very much against the restrictions on mass gatherings, but Israel, like other countries, has imposed. So there were big questions asked when the pictures started to circulate online. Ministers in the government essentially accused the police of not having done their job, saying, you know, that all gatherings have to be stopped and there can be no exemptions. There is talk now amongst ministers in Israel of imposing a much more stringent lockdown on areas where the ultra-Orthodox are in Israel. In response, an ultra-Orthodox religious leader has called on his followers not to pray in public, well, actually ordered them not to pray in public. So it's a big thing. But I remember Israel at the moment is going through another one of its very convoluted and difficult attempts to form a coalition government. That's happening at the moment, Benjamin Netanyahu and his rival Benny Gantz. And to form a coalition, you need the small ultra-Orthodox parties. So they exert, you know, great political power, even though they may not be that highly represented in the Knesset.
OK, let's look at the wider Middle East, because Syria has reported its first death from COVID-19. And, well, that could be a terrible place to have an outbreak.
Yes. I mean, this is the first official confirmation. So far, Syria has only said there have been a handful of cases. Now, there have been lots and lots of rumours and reports from various parts of the country that there have been cases, but in some of those areas, for example, Idlib, where the biggest numbers of people, a million or so, recently been forced from their homes and the worst fighting has been happening, there hasn't been any testing as yet. And that's been the same story in Yemen, which still hasn't reported a case, although it seems very likely that there are cases there. But again, that's a country which is in such a dire state. Again, great fears over what might happen there. And in Libya, another one of the war-torn Arab countries, there have been efforts made by both the current warring factions to try to impose controls, restrictions and curfews to prevent the spread. But those three areas are all seen as absolute potential powder kegs of how the virus could further spread and the lack of control that there would be if it did so.
Sebastian Usher. The Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari has addressed the country for the first time since the coronavirus outbreak there. Nigeria has more than 100 confirmed cases. President Buhari outlined a series of measures, including the lockdown of the capital, Abuja, and the country's financial hub, Lagos. Our correspondent in West Africa is Chichi Izundu.
This is a matter of life and death. That's what President Muhammadu Buhari said in his televised address to the nation. Lagos, Abuja, Ogun states have the most cases of COVID-19. And to try and stop that spread, the president announced they will undergo a two-week lockdown starting from Monday at 11 p.m. He ordered all citizens to stay at home and all businesses to close. He said officials would use the time to trace those who'd come into contact with positive cases. Buhari added that the government were clamping down on intercity and interstate travel. He says his government remains committed to do whatever it takes to fight the virus. But there's been growing criticism in Nigeria of the president's failure to make a public address on coronavirus. Today's speech is a response to speculation about his health after his chief of staff tested positive. The president himself tested negative.
Chichi Izundu. Meanwhile, Zimbabwe has begun a three-week lockdown, 10 days after confirming its first case of the virus. Police have already started mounting roadblocks, and the government says the military will step in if needed to enforce the stay-at-home order. Even as governments are urged to work together to defeat COVID-19, citizens are being encouraged to remain apart. Mass lockdowns, social distancing and self-isolation are becoming the norm around the world. Neuroscientist and psychologist Julianne Holt-Lundstad has studied the impact of spending too much time on your own. She spoke to James Kumarasamy.
I've spent much of my career researching both the short-term and long-term health effects of being socially isolated, feeling lonely, and conversely, the protective effects of being socially connected. One thing that we have found across robust data now is that being socially isolated and lonely increases our risk for earlier death. And conversely, that being socially connected is associated with a protective effect.
So broadly speaking, being on our own is less good for our health and our well-being than being with others.
The good news is that these long-term health effects, particularly risk for premature mortality, is really more of the chronic effects. This is something that we are all, of course, hoping is short-term. But nonetheless, there may be some effects on our physiology. Certainly, this can be very distressing in the short term. For example, we should recognize that these feelings of distress are normal. This is our body signaling us that we need to reconnect. Just like hunger signals us to eat and thirst signals us to drink water, loneliness is thought to be a biological drive that motivates us to reconnect. And so when we lack proximity to others, particularly trusted others, our brain and body may respond with a state of heightened alert. And this can result in increases in blood pressure, stress hormones, and inflammatory processes, which if experienced on a chronic basis can put us at increased risk for a variety of chronic illnesses. But hopefully we can be able to manage this in a way that can dampen and mitigate some of those responses. Experimental-based research has shown that how we appraise a situation, how we interpret it, can have a significant influence on mitigating those physiological responses. And so if we interpret a situation as being very threatening, we're going to see much more heightened versions of that as compared to if we interpret the situation as something that we can handle.
Neuroscientist and psychologist Julianne Holt-Lundstad. Now, something other than the coronavirus. One of the world's leading contemporary classical composers, Krzysztof Penderecki, has died at the age of 86. He started off pushing the boundaries of experimental music before turning his hand to film scores. More from our arts correspondent, Vincent Dowd.
Born in 1933 to a middle-class Catholic family, Krzysztof Penderecki grew up in a Poland where music was officially required to avoid the experimental. By the early 60s, the cultural climate had changed, and early work such as Threnody to the Victims of Hiroshima was anything but polite and reassuring.
My avant-garde was really very avant-garde, maybe much more than in other countries. Living in Poland. In the time I was a student, we were rebelling.
Penderecki was aware that some of his works were too difficult, even disturbing, for many music lovers, but he contributed to the scores of avant-garde Polish films, which brought him to the attention of filmmakers elsewhere. In 1973, his chilling music was used in The Exorcist. But probably the biggest exposure came in 1980, when Stanley Kubrick, always obsessed with music, decided Penderecki would be the right composer for The Shining.
Kubrick asked me to write the music for his Shining. I said no, because, you know, I said I'm busy. So, but I gave him some suggestion of the pieces that he's supposed to listen to. And then he did and took this music.
Krzysztof Penderecki's compositions included opera, symphonies and much else. By the end of a long career, he was widely performed around the world.
Vincent Dowd on Krzysztof Penderecki, who has died at the age of 86. And that is all from us for now. There'll be an updated version of the Global News podcast later. I'm Oliver Conway. Until next time, goodbye.
Podcast lovers, rejoice. Meet Pocket Cast, your new favorite podcast app for listening, search, and discovery. Our beautifully designed app gives you more control, makes it easier to find and organize podcasts, and offers powerful tools to customize listening. To hear all your favorite shows, download our free app at pocketcast.com or find us in the Apple App or Google Play stores.